This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of October 15th, 2018. I'm Mason King. Since 2011, it has been the most intensely scrutinized piece of land in central Indiana, 103 acres just west of downtown Indianapolis and south of the Indianapolis Zoo. For decades, it housed a massive metal stamping plant for General Motors. When the plant closed in 2011, it became one of the most enticing redevelopment opportunities in the region. Now, there have been a couple of false starts, including plans for Indianapolis's Criminal Justice Center, as well as a concert venue. But last May, its owner chose an ambitious proposal from Indianapolis-based real estate developer Ambrose Property Group. The project essentially would be an urban neighborhood or district with housing, retail, offices, lodging, public art, and lots of green space. And then came Amazon. The stamping plant site seemed tailor-made to fit Amazon's specifications for its $5 billion secondary headquarters project, and it is widely believed to be among the sites identified in Indianapolis's bid for HQ2. Now, of course, everyone even remotely involved in this process has been sworn to secrecy by Amazon, apparently on threat of being hunted down by drones, so we know very little about how that could play out until Amazon makes this decision later this year. But in the meantime, Ambrose says it's ready to launch the 15-year process of developing its project. It now has a name, a revised cost estimate well above $1 billion, and an infrastructure plan that includes rerouting White River Parkway through the project instead of along its eastern border with the White River. In fact, it turns out that the long-maligned White River will be the signature aspect of the project's identity. Ambrose co-founder and president Asif Badeh spilled the beans in an interview with the IBJ Podcast. Asif, thanks for being a part of the podcast this week.
Absolutely. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sure. I am heartbroken that we will no longer be able to call this site the GM stamping plant site. Well, what can we call this project?
We're proud to announce this week that the new name for this new downtown district or neighborhood is Waterside.
Obviously, Waterside makes sense from a literal standpoint. How did you come up with that name?
Well, I think, you know, we went through a process and looked at a lot of different suggestions and names, but we kept coming back to what we think is the best feature of a 100-acre site that we purchased about a year ago, and that's the water, you know, the waterfront. And it's something that maybe in central Indiana we haven't focused on, but I think recently it was reported that because of the Big Dig project, the White River is the cleanest it has been in about 100 years. Mm. We're excited about folks in Indianapolis and central Indiana re-engaging with the waterfront, and we thought Waterside was a good way to capture what we think is one of central Indiana's best natural resources.
Mm. So it's going to be just that simple. It's going to be called Waterside.
It is.
Not like Waterside at White River State Parkway or Waterside at...
It is Waterside.
We'll get back to the river in a second, but I did want to talk about the site. If we went out there today, what would we see?
You would see about 103 acres of concrete and maybe a few patches of grass poking through the concrete. You would see what we think is an extraordinarily exciting structure that was designed by Albert Kahn, one of the leading industrial architects of his time. I believe that was built just before the middle of the century. You know, Albert Kahn was a very interesting and celebrated architect because he did a couple different things. He brought sunlight into manufacturing facilities. And number two, he was one of the earliest architects for industrial structures that used steel and concrete and not wood to make workplaces like that safer.
So that structure is on the property right now, is preserved from the stamping plant?
It is. It's the last remaining vertical structure that's on the site, and we plan to reuse that. And I think in early 2019, we'll be announcing a reuse and how that kind of space, it's about 100,000 square feet total in terms of floor area, but it's got quite a bit of height to it, about 60 feet. So it probably could turn into two stories or three stories maybe, and we will definitely be reusing that structure.
So give me the elevator pitch for Waterside. 15 years from now, what is it going to be?
I think Waterside will be a sustainable development neighborhood district that seamlessly integrates with the neighborhoods around it. We're not going to build walls or be focused on a separate neighborhood. We're going to seamlessly integrate with the neighborhoods around us, partner with those neighborhoods. The roads will line up. We will engage with the water, hence the name. We will relocate White River Parkway to go right through Waterside. The current White River Parkway will become a promenade and recreational access point to the water.
Because right now it follows the river on the east border of the project.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And we think it's important to have true engagement, pedestrian and bike-friendly access to the waterfront. Mm-hmm. There's some great views of downtown throughout the site, and we intend to preserve those. We're very focused on the walkability and pedestrian and bike access from the site to the circle, that connectivity. Our goal is for Waterside to be a true mixed-use development. You will see office space, residential, both for rent and for sale, housing, restaurants, food and beverage, obviously, and other retail and entertainment uses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and public art and green space, water features.
Right.
We happen to be recording this in Bloomington. And when I think about the Waterside space, I wonder, I mean, is it going to feel like a college campus?
I don't know that Waterside is going to be modeled after any specific place. I think we're trying to have a nod to its history, which is a 100-plus year history of industry. You know, the first winner of the Indy 500 vehicle, the Marmon Wasp, was produced right in this area. There's been a tremendous amount of automobile history at this site. You'll see a nod to that history.
I mean, when you look at it on a map, I mean, it looks like it's its own little area. It looks like kind of an enclave. How do you integrate that into the neighborhoods nearby, which are, I think, notably, I mean, very old neighborhoods, some of which are beginning to get a lot of new money in them for redevelopment, but definitely have the feel of, you know, 100-year-old neighborhoods.
Right. Well, I think the first step is, the next step, maybe I should say, we have 25 or 30 city blocks there at Waterside, but there's no literal blocks. There's no streets today. There's no infrastructure. So we are going to slowly, but surely, over the next few years, start to build out that infrastructure. The first step is to move White River Parkway through kind of the central part of Waterside. And those roads will all connect to the neighborhoods and be planned very intentionally to connect to the neighborhoods to the all around us, particularly to the south, the Valley neighborhood. And that's kind of the first step to do that. This was one big building, one big user at with GM. We need to break it down into more bite-sized pieces, have the appropriate infrastructure and roads in place, bike paths, pedestrian walkways to improve its connectivity and make it more accessible for everybody and really integrate it into all the neighborhoods around us.
I mean, this neighborhood, I'm sure, will feel very new. From an economic standpoint, how do you keep a balance with the neighborhoods that are nearby, which are still, I think, pretty much low income?
Two or three years ago, we initially started having conversations with CICF, which is Central Indiana Community Foundation, where I actually happen to serve on the board. But we thought it was really important to think through how we redevelop this site or develop this site in a way that was sustainable, not only from an environmental point of view, but also from an economic point of view. And it will have a lot of new buildings on it, obviously. Now that's not going to happen overnight. It's probably going to take 10, 15, or maybe even 20 years or more. But we want to do that in a way that's positive for the neighborhoods around us. And we want to be very purposeful and think through how we develop in a way that promotes economic mobility. Molly Jeffers, who's our director of community engagement, she's been meeting with hundreds of folks, neighborhood groups, neighbors, and nonprofits in Indianapolis. One of our focus areas is to engage with nonprofit organizations to make sure that anyone and everyone that wants to ultimately work at the Waterside project and one of the corporate environments that ends up being there, there's also a balance with educational opportunities and maybe technical opportunities, educational opportunities to train and be able to experience economic mobility.
how many people could live there? I mean, are there going to be homes? I assume there are going to be apartments, maybe some townhomes to purchase.
Yeah, I think it'll be all of those things. I think it'll also include some industry or workforce housing. We originally had announced that we were going to, and this was kind of a baseline and what we've committed to both the city and Racer Trust, who we purchased the property from. We had initially committed to a $550 million project. Our latest estimates after doing a lot of feasibility analysis, planning, and frankly some other things that have come to light over the last year or so, our latest estimates are at about $1.3 billion, which includes about 8 million square feet of space total. But to answer your specific question in terms of how many people could live there, as it's planned today, we think there will be around 1,000 or 1,500 residences, both for rent or for sale at that location.
Just back up for a second, because I think sometimes we, the IBJ, use the word developer like everybody knows what it is. What does that mean?
We own the site, and we've been engaged, and I say we, Ambrose is comprised of a lot of very talented, great people, and then we have lots of folks from the outside. You know, I mentioned CICF has been a partner with us on the community side. We had Ratio Architects as a land planning firm, and we've worked with a lot of different folks and partners to get to the point where we're at today. And really, this is just a launching point. We closed on the site about a year ago. We're announcing the branding. We have more updated plans, as I just mentioned to you, in terms of feasibility and what we expect to develop there. We currently own the entire site. And in the coming months, I think in early 2019, we'll announce the first vertical construction projects that will occur. And we expect those to start in late 2019.
So you plan the buildings, kind of figure out how you want it to lay out. You arrange for the infrastructure, streets and sewers, landscaping and all those things. Are you paying to build the buildings?
Our plan as of right now is for us to own some of the buildings long term and then bring in partners who will develop and own buildings such as the residential buildings, which is not our specialty.
And then when we say it's a $1.3 billion project, is that all money that's all coming out of Ambrose's pocket at some point?
First of all, let me reiterate that that's an estimate based on our latest planning that could go up or it could go down. With respect to your specific question, again, between Ambrose and the partners that may develop residential space or other types of space, entertainment venues perhaps, that is what the value of those projects is, what will comprise the $1.3 billion number, that the estimate that I gave.
So some of which Ambrose would develop, some of which another developer
exactly,
would kind of do.
Exactly. Gotcha. And that's where things stand today.
Is there any place in the city of Indianapolis that this will feel remotely like?
No, that's a good question. I think Indianapolis has a lot to be proud of. I think there's a lot of great development going on in Indianapolis. Our goal, and we've frankly traveled to a lot of different places around the country and thought through placemaking and what we can do. I think our goal is for this to just be a little bit different, to maybe have a little bit more focus on connectivity, a little bit more of an organic feel and nod to that industrial history. We're working hard for this to be a place, both from a brick and glass standpoint, but also more of a state of mind standpoint, that it's just different and a place where people really want to be.
So the first hunk of it, the first phase that you have planned, what are we going to see, and how long is that going to take?
Our goal is for there to be vertical construction started by before the end of 2019. My thought is that we'll be planning to announce building starts early in 2019, and I think it'll be most likely office space and residential space.
And then what part of the property would you imagine that would be?
Right now, what seems to be the most likely area is the southeast corner, so kind of near the current White River Parkway and Oliver Avenue. Oliver Avenue, as you may know, the bridge is being improved currently. The city's been a great partner. The city of Indianapolis has been a great partner, very forward-thinking, and they've been very focused as they've worked with us and Racer, frankly, even before we got involved or were chosen as the buyer. They've been very forward-thinking and been pushing for a transformative development here, but the improvements on Oliver Avenue are really going to make that a great place to be. We think that southeast corner of the property of the 100 acres is a good place to start, just from a logistics standpoint. Gives anyone plenty of ways to get to that new project or that the series of projects once they're open.
So let me go back about a year. This is the trillion-dollar elephant in the room. So your proposal for redeveloping the stamping plant was selected in May 2017. On September 7th, Amazon submits a request for proposals for this big HQ2 project. And among other things, it says it's looking for a 100-acre site near a major metropolitan area, wants to be close to a major highway, wants to be close to an international airport. It seems like a great fit. And we know Indianapolis submitted a bid. I know Amazon has sworn everybody who's remotely involved in this process to secrecy, and they've been very effective. Are you even able to acknowledge that the stamping plant land is at least among the suggested sites in the Indianapolis bid?
What I will say is, number one, I think it's an awesome nod to Indianapolis's reputation and where we've gotten as a city and a region, and frankly a state, to be on Amazon's list for the final 20. I think we always punch above our weight class, and we have that tradition. The public-private philanthropic partnership and that mindset that we have in Indianapolis is exceptional. I think what I'll say specifically about tenants is that we've talked to several tenants. We're excited about how much interest we have. That interest and where we think the market is going for Central Indiana, based on great work done by a lot of people, including mayors, last several mayors, as well as Mayor Hogsett and Governor Holcomb and last few governors as well. We've really set our state and region up for a lot of success, and I think that's why you are hearing me be very bullish on what we'll do here, and we're reacting to that exciting possibility of where Indiana and Central Indiana are headed.
Let me ask you this. The potential for Amazon as a tenant, has that possibility affected how you proceeded?
I've probably said about as much as I am going to about that. We haven't ruled any single tenant in or out.
In any event, in your planning, you guys have now reached the point where you're like, we want to take the next step, which is to really launch development of the site.
Absolutely.
So let's look ahead like 15 years. Let's say that I and my family decided we want to live in Waterside. So I may have an apartment there. I may own a home. And I assume I can bike to work if I want.
Absolutely.
Would I have a car?
Car parking requirements in workspaces and office buildings. We've seen that go down in a material way just in the last few years. It's absolutely amazing how fast that's changing. We're planning any parking facility, any garage we'll build will have a plan for how it can be retrofitted at least to some degree, partially at least, if not fully, into something else.
Let's say I work on the circle. How easy is it going to be for me to walk?
Well, I think you can walk. I do it from time to time. You can walk to Waterside in about 20 minutes. It's not very far away. Sometimes in Indiana or Central Indiana, we think it's far away, but in most major metropolitan areas, which we are, it's not very far at all. It's less than a mile from the circle. With a bike or a scooter or a Segway, it's less than 10 minutes.
And let me go back to the White River. So the White River obviously is a huge part of the identity of the project. And right now, if you look at the White River, you go, wow, that's a river. It feels a little bit raw. What would you like to see happen? What needs to happen for that section of the river that runs through downtown?
As you know, Visit Indy and I believe the Hamilton County Tourism Organization have partnered together to study the 50 plus miles of White River frontage that we have in Central Indiana. We've been engaged with that team. We're excited about the creative and forward-thinking work that they're doing, and we're excited to see what that study yields. We think, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities. As I mentioned, we've looked all over the country. We have more work to do from that standpoint, but we see no reason why there can't be lots of different cool features, like maybe water taxis or a variety of recreational uses that are available, whether it's at GM or other spots.
And then on Waterside's side of the river, what would you foresee for the waterfront?
We have a variety of ideas. There's a lot of ideas kind of on the whiteboard right now with respect to that recreational waterfront. Obviously, it's our namesake, and it matters a lot to us. And it'll take time to develop that, but we're looking forward to continuing our engagement with the community and other organizations to get going on that in the next year or two.
Well, I can't wait. So best of luck to you as you work it out.
Thank you so much.
My thanks again to Asif Badeh.
Before you get on with your week, I wanted to draw your attention to our coverage of Indiana's closely watched Senate race. With 3 weeks to go until decision time, IBJ's Lindsay Airdoty has produced dueling in-depth profiles of Democrat Joe Donnelly and Republican Mike Braun, as well as a handy guide to where they stand on immigration, health care, taxes, and tariffs. Lindsay also takes a close look at Donnelly's record in the Senate and details Braun's business and land holdings. You can find the profiles and the copy of IBJ you, of course, have delivered to your home or online at IBJ.com. Hey, thanks again for checking out the podcast this week. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.